All right. I don't know how many weeks ago that Kevin's dad was here, and I had the announcements in the opening, and I said I was going to speak on the home, and that was his subject. So I thought, well, maybe I'm not necessarily going to repeat a lot of the things that he said, but I would like to speak this morning in, I'm not sure what the title should be, Parenting Our Children or Parent Training. It's difficult to train our children if the parents aren't trained. So you put the title in there, Parenting training parents or training children, parenting our children, or yeah, whatever. But if you turn to Ephesians chapter 6, we'll read that those first couple verses there. And probably I'd be talking Kevin's dad. What was his name? Tim? Is it Tim? Tim Weaver covered a lot of the earlier stages of training children. And I'd like to kind of pick up when the children are a little bit older and on up into adulthood. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise, that it may be well with thee, and that thou mayest live long on the earth. And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. A lot of times when we think of parenting or training our children, we immediately think of spankings and punishments and in whatever form that may be. You know, there's punishment in, especially in church, when you don't really want to make a scene in church, you pinch. You pinch your child. You, at home, sometimes you make them sit on a chair beside you. Have daddy time. We take away privileges. Parenting is more than just that. It's more than just handing out punishment. And if I use personal pronouns here, it's keep in mind that I'm not necessarily talking about any particular child of mine. I need you to keep that in mind, because sometimes I forget myself and say he or she, and it's just a use of a pronoun. So keep that in mind, please. Okay, to start off, turn to Genesis chapter 18. I'd like to give you an example. I thought of the first one, the first thing that is very important is to be an example to our children. To be an example. Genesis chapter 18, verse 19. This is God's testimony of Abraham. It says, "For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice and judgment, for the Lord, that the Lord may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him." There's a couple testimonies of the Lord in here about Abraham. Number one is, "For I know him." The Lord is saying, God said, "I know Abraham." You know, there's many, many people out there that say, "I'm a Christian. I know the Lord. I know Jesus." There's a restaurant over in Melbourne that says, "No solicitors." I don't remember. There's like four different things. And then it says, it says something about bringing Jesus here. We already know him. In other words, we don't need that. But the question this morning is, does God know us? We know the Lord, yes. We know God, but does God know me? Does God know you? The Lord said, I know Abraham. There was a connection between God and Abraham that God knew Abraham. Yes, the Lord knows us. He knows us by name. He knows our He knows the number of hair on our head. He knows that. But is there a relationship between us? And does God recognize that relationship? So first of all, do you know the Lord? Do I know the Lord? And does the Lord know me? Does the Lord know you? The second testimony was, for I know him that he will command his children. So Abraham had a desire, not only a desire, but a burning, what's the word I want? Just I had a desire for his children to walk after the Lord. Not only did he desire that, but he asked them to. He commanded his children to walk in my footsteps. It says, he will command his children and his household after him. After him. And that stood out to me this morning. Abraham was not only telling his children, follow the Lord, follow God, but he was saying, follow me, like Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ. It's very difficult to teach our children something if it's words only. So if I want my children to follow the Lord, then I better be an example in following the Lord. Be an example. And it says, they shall keep the way of the Lord. What a testimony of Abraham that the God was giving him, for I know him that he will command his children and his household after him. And they shall keep the way of the Lord to do justice. So what kind of an example are you this morning? As your children follow you, will you lead them to God? Will you direct their hearts to God, to Jesus? Now there's another testimony in chapter 19 about Lot, verse 14. And Lot went out and spake unto his sons-in-law, which married his daughters, and said, up, get you out of this place, for the Lord will destroy this city. But he seemed as one that mocked unto his sons-in-law. I don't know what you think about when you think of Lot. Now, I know the New Testament does in 2 Peter 2:7 would call Lot a just man. But it seems like to me there's a little bit of a disconnect between Lot's words and Lot's way of life. I don't know. It just says that he seemed as one that mocked. In other words, what he's saying is just, it's laughable. It's not even true. Now, I realize these sons-in-law had a choice to make. I'm not discrediting that. But if Lot really had a desire to walk after the Lord, which obviously he did, why did he stay in Sodom? I mean, why didn't he move somewhere where he could raise a family? Was he the example that he should have been? As we think of an example, one thing that we need to keep in mind as we think of training our children, And I don't know who made this statement. It's not original with me. It says, as parents, we need to be what we want our children to become. We need to be what we want our children to become. More is caught than taught. And again, it's foolish to think that we can teach our children one thing and live something different and expect our children to follow our philosophy, our way of life, our values, our beliefs, because in the end they see that we don't believe that either if we don't live it. What kind of an example are we? Someone else had made this statement. As parents, we are really concerned about the way for our children. And I think that way there is has the idea of we're very concerned about the... Providing a safe place, a safe environment. We are concerned about influences in their life. We are concerned about school, church. We are concerned about the way. But are we preparing our children for the way? Are we preparing our children to be that good influence? To be that... child that does not is not always in the absolute middle of all the trouble and the stirrings of things that are going on in school and church and wherever, at home. Are we preparing our children for the way? Have our children been taught to be kind? To be the kind of friends that other parents are comfortable with, that are glad to have their children to be around. What kind of children do we have? You know, when we as parents aren't around, how do our children act and talk then? You know, sometimes your children have this tendency to act really, really good when dad and mom are around, but as soon as they leave the room, as soon as they leave their sight, they're immediately cutting up and doing all kinds of things. What kind of children do we have? How are we preparing our children for the way? Let's go back to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4 gives us some admonition on how to train up our children. Number one, it's talking to fathers. So primarily fathers this morning. Those of you that have children or are responsible for children. Those that have taken upon themselves the responsibility of children through whatever avenue that might be. Having biological children, adopted or foster children, or taking a child into your home that's without adoption or fostering, just taking care of them. So fathers, this is you, this is me. Ye fathers, provoke not. That word provoke has the meaning of inciting. Don't provoke them or don't incite them to anger. Don't aggravate them. Don't needle them or goad them. Irritate, bait, inflame, rouse, niggle, hassle. That's a long list, isn't it? Don't do that, the Lord is saying. Provoke not your child to anger. Provoke not your child. It doesn't take long for parents, and especially a dad, to recognize some buttons they can push in our children to see what aggravates them. It doesn't take long. An example of this would be, you know, when discussing an issue, that you and your child doesn't agree upon. Now, I'm talking about a child that is a little older. As a father, it should be your responsibility or my responsibility to be calm and not say things that you know aren't true or that you don't mean or exaggerate the situation. In the heat of the battle, we can at times say things that otherwise or in other times, situations, we would never say. I'd like to give you an example of this. In another community, there was this father that was talking to his family member. And the discussion was the family member wanted to do one thing, the father wanted to do something different. So in the discussion, there was a lot of discussion, and it finally got kind of heated. And the father started talking and saying things that he never intended to say. He never intended to say some of the things that he said in the way he said it. And the temperature started rising. It got to the point where the family member said that I don't care if I don't go back for 5 years to let this thing cool down. And friends, this was in a Christian home. Now, who was at fault? I'm sure both of them were. But primarily, it was the dad's responsibility to keep that thing cool. When these things happen, please, please, let's have the humility to say, I'm sorry. And to understand the things that are, the dynamics of making this thing happen is primarily upon me. That I have to diffuse this situation. After all, these children are adults and they can think for themselves, even though sometimes they might make decisions that are completely contrary to what I would make and want them to make. Somewhere we have to let go. I'm not sure where that's at. I'd like to give you a biblical example of this. Turn to 1 Samuel 20, of saying things that you possibly never intended to say or about the situation just blowing up out of control. And this, 1 Samuel chapter 20 is talking about Saul, and this was after Saul was told by Samuel that the kingship would be taken away from him and given to another man that is more worthy. 1 Samuel 20, verse 30 to 34. Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said unto him, Thou son of a perverse, rebellious woman, do not I know that thou hast chosen the son of Jesse to thine own confusion and to the confusion of thy mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse liveth upon the ground, thou shalt not be established, nor thy kingdom. Now, he already knew that the kingdom is not going to be Jonathan's. He already knew that, but he didn't accept it. Wherefore, now send and fetch him unto me, for he shall surely die. And Jonathan answered Saul his father and said unto him, Wherefore shall he be slain? What hath he done? And Saul cast the javelin at him to smite him, whereby Jonathan knew that it was determined of his father to slay David. So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger and did eat no meat the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David because his father had done him shame. I don't know what kind of relationship Saul had with Jonathan's mother, but do you really think Saul thought that Jonathan's mom was a rebellious and perverse woman. Do you really think that? I don't know. I don't know what kind of a woman she was. But I kind of doubt that he actually thought that. But in the heat of the moment, he just blotched it all out. In the heat of the moment, Saul said things that he probably didn't believe or meant. Again, when this happens, please, let's have the humility and the grace to take it back. The other testimony, another testimony of the situation in the Christian home that I was talking about earlier, he said the dad refused to take some of his words back. He refused to take it back. Friends, that's pride. It's pride. He refused. No, let's have the humility and grace to take it back, to apologize, and to ask for forgiveness. That's the only way that we're going to defuse the situation. You know, I have found in my short years as a parent that if I take the initiative and say I'm sorry to my children, most often they will respond in kind. They will respond with, "I'm sorry too. Can you forgive me?" Remember, heat begets heat. Anger is usually met with anger. Psalm says, but a soft answer turneth away wrath. A soft answer turneth away wrath. Another example, if you know your child is not a morning person, we have those around among us. Here recently, we were visiting with some friends, and this friend is obviously a morning person because he said, when I get up, I say, "Good morning, Lord." That's my first words. And when my wife gets up, she says, "Oh, Lord, it's morning." And that's usually the way it is. Opposites somehow attract. There's one that's eager to get up and out of bed, and the other one is just can't drag himself out of bed. Well, when you have children like this, you know what your children are like. If you have a, "Oh Lord, it's morning" child, the best time is probably not the best time to speak to him about a missed curfew or something is first thing in the morning. They're, you know, if especially if they're barely awake and you kind of light into them, it's usually not good. They need to wake up. You know, when I am in sitting in chair and my children come down, you know, I can. They come down and it's a big difference. I'll just leave it there. It's a big difference. In our home, we have somehow our children have picked up, and I do too. You know, the first thing we do is get up and take a shower. It kind of helps us wake up. Then the second thing we do is go get a cup of coffee quick. Those things are kind of important in our home. And, you know, we don't do a lot of talking before that first cup of coffee is gone. So choose our time wisely when we need to address an issue. Address it, yes, but choose your time wisely. Don't just, the first, very first opportunity, just light into them. It usually doesn't work well. Above all else, keep your cool. Keep your cool. Okay, now the third one here is, don't provoke them to wrath. Again, I was talking about that some. You know, as a goal, our goal as a father should not be to let our frustration and anger at the lack of obedience or the irresponsibility of our child rule or take over our life, but to teach them by example how to control our spirit. I'd like to, I have to tell a story on myself. A number of years ago, my child and I hope I can keep this without, you know who it was, but my child and I were down in Batesville. We were hanging a special order piece of gutter, and it was probably 100 feet long. There was a community man helping us, and we had got it all rolled out, and it was almost in place. And it was almost buckling in the middle because it was kind of almost too long. So the child put a screw in. I told the child to tack it and then come over to the center and get it up into place. And child did, and about halfway to the center, the whole piece fell down, and here the screw was only about a quarter inch into the wood. I couldn't believe this. I thought I kept my cool pretty good. I thought I did. I controlled. We had to go to Little Rock to get more material to finish the job, and the job needed to be done that day. Later, the community man told me, "You got pretty angry there." And I thought I had controlled my spirit very well, but evidently I didn't. Other people can, a lot of times, can see and sense much more than what we can, how our spirit is responding. We can expect our child to become angry if we are angry. Let's not provoke them to wrath. You know, we can't expect our child to keep their cool if we blow our top all the time. The other sobering thing here is our children will learn and make choices how to respond to life as they observe parents. Now, they are not consciously analyzing, okay. Very likely they won't consciously analyze, say, okay, Dad got angry because of stress in his life, so therefore I need to get angry when I have stress. They're not going to analyze it in that way. But subconsciously, they will see how I respond to life, very likely that's the way they're going to learn to respond to life. And that's a tremendous responsibility upon us as parents, is to teach our children to respond right by being the right example. I guess I can't stress that enough, to be the right example. It's not easy. It's not always. We fail. We don't always leave the best example. Going back to Ephesians 4, it says, bring them up, so train them. There's a training going on. We have the responsibility and the privilege to daily shape our child's life and their worldview. That's a responsibility and a privilege, but it's a tremendous responsibility. how to respond to life, how to relate to life, and how to act, talk, look, where to go. You know, it takes a long time and a lot of hard work and consistency to train a child. When you think you have finally got her trained, her, him, the child, trained, then they throw a curveball at you and you have to work at this yet. It's just, that's life. They surprise you with a new area that needs to be trained. So train our children. Train them. Train them to work. To enjoy work. Train them to get up in the morning. To be considerate. To be respectful. To say thank you. Be polite. To be honest. To be happy. To make right choices. To love their siblings. Train them to get along with people. To think of others more than themselves. Train them to be unselfish. Teach them reverence for the things of God. You know, family devotions is an excellent time to teach our children to sit still in the house of God. It's an excellent time. Another way that we can train our children is to keep them with us in church. Don't let them run wild. Give them responsibilities. Show them how to do the work and then expect them to be responsible. Training our children. You know, we don't do our children any good, but much, much harm by being the doting parent. Maybe even the doting grandparent. I don't know where that comes in. I haven't had that much experience with that. But we don't do our children any good by indulging them in all with everything that their selfish little heart desires. It does them much harm. Remember, we cannot buy our child's love or obedience. It's impossible. We cannot buy our child's love or obedience. So train them in the nurture. The nurture and admonition of the Lord is the thought of nurture here means kind of gives the thought of to cherish, to encourage, to foster, develop, support. It also has the thought of discipline. So it's kind of an overall picture, a well-rounded mixture of love, encouragement, support, discipline, and teaching. That's the nurture aspect. It's taking everything in consideration and lumping it all together and making it one great big package. We're not overly strong in one area and lax in another. We nurture them by example and expecting them to follow. The admonition is rebuke and correction. Being willing to address issues that need addressing, not allowing our children to sway us or to lead us, but we are leading them. Remember that. We don't need to be afraid of our children. We are called to lead our children, not them lead us as parents. A child, because of, well, not just a child, a human, but especially comes out in a child, because of his fallen nature, will want to be boss or top dog. And yeah, that applies to adults as well. Let's not let our children boss around other little children or have to be the first one to always give the rules of the game. It gets kind of close to home sometimes. What happens is a lot of times the boss children, the ones that are being bossed, will in turn go around trying to boss other smaller children. And it just keeps going down and down and down. Becoming a terror to the smaller children. It's a terror to them, children, and also to other children, if allowed unchecked. So let's be careful of that tendency in our own life and in the lives of our children. You know, part of the problem of modern day children is the fact that they were never taught to submit to the authorities of their life. And now the last one, in the Lord, making sure that what we are teaching our children has its foundation in the Word of God. Praying for wisdom and grace to show our children the Godhead in all its purity. Now a couple more here is to be patient with our children. Sometimes it's kind of hard. We think we have said and we have talked and we have told them time and time and time again, and it just seems to fall on deaf ears. They don't listen. Be patient. Remember, Rome wasn't built in one day. Isaiah 28:9-13 says, "Whom shall he teach knowledge?" That is our question. Who will receive knowledge? "To whom shall he make to understand doctrine? Them that are weaned from milk," they're growing up, "and drawn from the breast, for precept must be upon precept." Again. "Precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. For with stammering lips and another tongue will he speak to this people, to whom he said, 'This is the rest wherewith ye may cause the weary to rest. This is the refreshing,' yet they wouldn't hear." And verse 13a, "But the word of the Lord was unto them precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little bit at a time." I remember when our children were small, especially the two oldest, we had a real issue with them as far as just to, they were real children. And I remember one day, we would take them out from church. They wouldn't behave. We would just take them out and punish them, give them spankings, and other people noticed this. They said, "Well, they have to take them out 4 and 5 and 6 times a service. I know what that's like." But I remember the day that one of my brothers came to me and he said, "You know, I think you're getting something across to your children. I think they're growing up." And that was such a blessing to me. Slowly but surely, if we're patient, consistent in our training, I think they will learn something. So don't give up, brother, sister. Teach. Keep on teaching. Be patient. Spend much time in prayer. There is hope that the truth of God will someday take root in and prosper in our child's heart. Proverbs 22 verse 6 says, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old he will not depart from it." I'm not sure exactly how to interpret this verse, because if we interpret it that if the parents do everything perfect or as good as they can and the child still goes wrong, there's the child, it could give us the thought that the child, if he doesn't embrace the doctrines of God, the doctrines of the parents, then the parents failed. It could give that thought. And it kind of leaves that thought of the child being a free moral agent, have the freedom of choice kind of leaves that out. So I'm not sure exactly. I'll give you my thought. If you really study the words, it could kind of give you the thought that if the child walks away from God after you have trained this child, if he turns his back on the doctrine that you were trying to instill upon him, in him, he cannot forget or just shut it off from his mind. It's always there. And at the most inopportune moments, it comes back and, well, man, I should do this. I mean, my parents taught me this. You understand what I'm saying? Because if we take it that the parents have to be perfect, then it leaves the child completely blameless. And that's not true. Every child has a choice to make, to follow God. As far as this, another, just a thought on patience, a quote by Howard Bean says, "I have heard the opinion expressed that nothing prejudices children against accepting their parents' beliefs and spiritual truths more than parental impatience." Now, I don't know if there was a study done on that or not, but if you stop and think about if you're always constantly impatient with your child, it has a way of wearing your child down that they don't want anything to do with what you teach. Seems like. So maybe this morning the Lord has reminded you of some things that need to be taken care of, or in the past that you have failed in your responsibilities to your responses to your children. You know, there is no better time than now to go back and apologize, to humbly say I'm sorry, and to start again. God is not asking us that because we have failed in the past, we can't go forward. He is asking us to stop, repent today, apologize in humility, say, I'm sorry, but then start from here and go forward. That's what God is asking. We can start a new course today. So I'd like to encourage all of us, as we think of our children, there is no greater joy than to see our children walking in truth. But we as parents make mistakes. We do make mistakes. We are human. I'd like to give you a couple verses as an encouragement. Philippians 4:13 says, "I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me." And that means raising children for the Lord. Verse 19, "But my God shall supply all your need according to his riches in glory by Christ Jesus." So not only can we do things through Christ who strengtheneth me, but God is going to be there to provide the strength, the grace to do it. 2 Corinthians 12:9, part A says, "And he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness." Let's kneel for prayer.